You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Kuperman's header, it's 3-1. Danny Kuperman has scored again. Paul Mariner is going absolutely mad on the sidelines. It is now 3-1.
Wednesday, June 20th. It's J.C. Plant, Daniel J. Rouse, and I'm Ian Clark, and we are live once again for a road game from the Football Factory as Toronto FC earned their first result in the Paul Mariner era through a delicious 3-3 draw with the Houston Dynamo. A critical point earned or 2 points dropped? There's two sides to this story as Danny Kuperman slotted home a brace but defensive lapses undid what would have been an epic win. We're analyzing the game, what was different from the weekend loss to Kansas City, and what Paul Mariner needs to do to keep his job and extend his unbeaten run to two games. All in the next 35 minutes on Eastside Stand Up. Let's start with the stock, guys. Here we are at the Football Factory on a lovely Wednesday night. And I'm trying to come up with, as I usually do, sort of like how we're going to describe how we're feeling after this game, the result, a 3-3 draw of the Houston Dynamo. And I'm sure it's a mixed bag. If we look across the different mediums of communication that are available to us in terms of disappointment, perhaps. But I think some people are probably feeling like, at least it wasn't a loss. At least we didn't get lost in a 3-3 draw with Houston, who's not a bad team. So
on the road,
all in all,
on Wednesday we come through with a result.
Happy, very happy.
And that's what we were saying before, is like midweek games seem to be the way to go for Toronto FC this year, and last year as well, where it's like let's just scratch out these weekend games. If I can do that, then we'll probably do all right. But I wanted to start it off because if only the result had been slightly different. We had the perfect sort of like way to cue this up in terms of where we are. And the last time the three of us got together, Tim Vickery could not be here. He was supposed to be here, which would have brought the four guys. The last time we were together was Santos Laguna. And for that game, we couldn't get into this bar because it was so packed. And 3 months later, we pretty much could have sat anywhere we wanted.
We can have a run around in here and like they won't care. Just as long as there's people in here having a drink, that's it.
we were the only ones in the bar for a while.
So obviously let's connect the dots here between the last time we were together against Santos Laguna and then today against Houston, sitting at 1-10, not looking good at all. Coming against the Houston team who've undefeated at home at the BBVA Compass Stadium. 75% winning percentage there as well. And I don't know about you guys, but and coming into this game,
defending finalists, right? And yeah, we're on the road. We've always been poor on the road. Houston's still a good squad, good players.
And they started excellently as well. The first 15 minutes, I remember saying, I can see this is going to be 2-0 to Houston.
Yes.
They were all over TFC. They didn't have a chance. I think it still ended probably near a 70% possession for Houston. It was 63, probably around 75 minutes. They dominated from then on. They played well. They didn't play particularly badly. Well, actually, the defence did. The defence was like a sieve. But the rest of the team, they were all right. Not too bad.
Yo, you do, JC, were going with a 1-1 draw coming into this game. Is that right?
That's right. I was feeling some optimism coming in. And no real reason. It's a new dawn. It's a new happy JC.
No real reason to have optimism. Toronto FC.
I love it.
Just a flip of the coin, roll of the dice.
It was just a gut feeling, and I think you were saying the same thing. You kind of have that feeling, it's like, you know what? I think maybe we can do something. And then you try to temper that. So I was like, well, I mean, I think we can win, but there's no way that's going to happen. So
yeah,
I'll go with the draw. You know, I'll show a little optimism and my a little faith in my team.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing where it's like, what is it? In baseball, when a pitcher is pitching a no-hitter, no one's sitting next to him on the bench,
yeah,
right? In between innings, he's all by himself at the very end. They should have done something. I don't know what would be the football equivalent of that, but they should have done something. Like, they, no one talks to Kosic. I don't know what it would be, but they didn't do it. But let's circle around to the beginning then. So then you were going with 1-1. Dan, you're kind of feeling like a 2-0. I thought it was going to be 2-1 for Houston. But the one thing I kind of, you know, pulled together from this game, and as the game was playing out and Toronto was doing well, was that, oddly enough, last year, when Toronto was looking, you know, diabolical and didn't look like they had their feet beneath them and were trying to figure out the system that Winter was implementing, Houston comes to Toronto. Houston looking pretty decent, and we pull out this 2-1 win. This game that sort of like came out of nowhere, and we saw these goals from Plata, and Plata like really shine and looked really good. And then kind of today we saw this result where all of a sudden Kovermans shows up really for the first time this year. You know, what are your thoughts on sort of like the, especially in that first half, because that's the one I think that was the cornerstone of the result, the players that stood up and the plays that really stood out?
Yeah, for me, the first half was obviously our best half of football this year by a wide margin, I think. Even including the Champions League, we were just so good. And you can say this at Santos, the first half, we were pretty good, but that was still 2-2. At this time, it was 3-1. You know, instead of conceding at the death of the half, we actually scored. Things seemed to turn around. We had a double post, but it went in instead of coming out like it did in the last match. You know, and then Kuhlermans was all over the place. He scored from the great passing play of Jocelyn Avila. Then he had the little one between his legs where he almost scored. And then right after that, he scored on the header. So it was like, oh, this is going great. And then what can we say about Terry Dunfield, attacking midfielder? I mean, that first half, he was over. He even had a near scissor kick in the 29th minute. I mean, it's a Dunfield scissor, so it didn't. There's not much air there, but oh my god!
I just enjoyed the different usage of Kuhlmann's. I mean, under Vinter, it was just hoofball onto his big meaty head, but now it's just like on the ground. Kuhlmann's was getting involved, you know, tracking back, tackling the defenders. It was on the floor, and he did a good job of it. I mean, I'm not the biggest fan of Kuhlmann's. I mean, he scores a lot of goals, but he's very lumbersome.
He's paid to score goals.
Yeah, exactly. And he's a very, very poor Mariner-esque player. He's almost like a traditional English centre-forward. He's kind of the opposite of the Dutch national team, I'd say, because he's not very pretty to watch, but he's very effective. And and yeah, Terry Dunfield, attacking midfielder, he was sublime, particularly in the first half. But he some great deliveries into the box. He's certainly not a winger. He's very slow, especially compared to when you got Plata and Lamb, who are like a turd off a shiny shovel, speed wise. Whereas Dunfield was very hard working as usual, but a different side to his game today. I enjoyed that.
And going in, one of the big storylines was, oh, it's really, really hot on the pitch, the humidity. It's going to be very difficult for the players. And then just the hustle we saw in the first half, where it's almost like they didn't care, and it was reckless abandon. It was good. I mean, the goal we conceded, we have to say, it was poor marking. And, you know, I railed a few times against our tiny center backs.
The first one.
Yeah.
Bullet header, though. Bullet header.
Yeah, but Eckersley...
But it should have been covered, yeah.
Eckersley just didn't get to it because he's too small. And Henry wasn't in the right spot as well. And I just don't think that's a proper centre-back pairing. I mean, we saw our saviour come on at the end, but we'll get to that, I'm sure.
I don't know if we will. Should we name who the saviour is? Just people know. If you listen back to the Santos Laguna podcast... JC was feeling pretty optimistic that Decoy Williams
was back, then our center back problem would be solved, at least on his side of the center back.
And he got in the mix there at the end, you could say. Although it was Henry, I think, who got a foot on the ball, but
yeah, see, Williams was in there. The Williams guy
he was getting busy. Yeah. He was stretching his legs.
Yeah, his first match in a long time, so I think he'll be all right. And
it's
great to
see
him
get a run out. I mean, yeah, exactly. Obviously there weren't many options on the bench because there had been a few fisticuffs in the Houston Town Centre on Monday night. What do we think about that? Do you give him a 2-week suspension? No, 2-week fine or something like that? What do you do?
I think after the result, you send him back out. Yeah. Hey, Silf, I see. Can you interrupt the Toronto Cops?
Yeah. They're already home now. We already said this. They have a head start on the team.
Yeah.
They can go out tomorrow night here.
Absolutely.
Cause a little trouble.
There's plenty of places.
Do what they got to do, and the team comes back and has the whole situation all over again. At the bare minimum, we get a draw at home, which this year, a draw is a win. That's kind of the way I think we've been sort of spinning it.
I think we might have seen the back of Nick Salzman, though. I went for a wee just then, and I saw this UFC post, and I saw Brock Lesnar in the middle of it. I had to double take. I thought it was Nick Salzman. He got a new career there. He's bulked up a little bit, UFC fighting. Now that's it. Out in Toronto. Yeah, don't go out in Toronto on Friday night. Nick Salzman's going to get you.
Nick Salzman's going to get you.
But if you do look at the mugshots, Aceval has a very... almost defiant pose, like "come at me, bro."
Louis Silver's just a blur because he's busy running off.
Okay,
so going
back to the game in hand.
So going into the second half, we're feeling pretty good.
But you know what? The one thing I kind of wanted just before we get into that was something that I thought was important with that first half and that 3-1 win, which we haven't seen very often. The first thing was, I did think, though, despite the shaky start, it wasn't as bad as against Kansas City.
Right.
I did think, though, if Houston had sort of really like piled on the pressure, there might have been more cracks, but they didn't, luckily for us.
Yeah.
Toronto, I thought, was able to sort of like give and take,
yeah,
or take and give, however you want to spin it, that they were actually able to, you know, when Houston would come down our end, we went back down to their end. And, you know, Terry had that nice little curling shot into the Coverman's that just missed by the, you know, I think it was Cameron who got a head on, or Boswell. But I think one of the most significant things that first half, which we haven't seen really often as Chauncey, was that the midfield was, if you look at guys, the players who were key players in the first half,
bossing.
You look at Frings was good, De Guzman was good, Terry Dunfield, attacking midfielder, was good, and Eric Avila was good. All four of them were integral in those goals and Toronto getting his point. And how often can we say that? Was that it was all part of, you know, it was all part of the midfield building that up. And also the other point was that for that long stretch, you never heard Henry. You know, you never heard Morgan. You never heard Eckersley. There was a long stretch where you just didn't even hear any of the defenders' names. And that's something that I don't think we've heard all year long.
And not only that, after they scored, we scored immediately. Like, yeah. That's something we don't usually see. We've seen it go the other way a lot with a quick response from the other team. But that's not something that we've done where we've got a quick response. And by, 20-1 margin, that was our longest time we've had the lead in a match.
Yeah, I think we came up to two games. What was it? Chicago was the only game we had
Chicago
lead.
Chicago 96 seconds, and then we scored in the 89th minute in the one other game we had won. So that was only a few minutes lead. I think it was 4 minutes we had the lead there. So this was by far, you know, I think no matter what the result, it was by far our best match of the year. Yeah.
The most pleasing thing for me is, like, normally you can pick out the best player on the pitch. Like, normally you can say Plata ran the show, Reggie Lam had a great game. It was a team performance today. Nobody stuck out, everybody was rumbling around. Like, even Julian Guzman played well, which I was quite surprised about. I mean, that was a for the goal right before half time. I have to say that was a delicious cross. Like, I almost wanted to put a straw to it and taste it. It was fantastic.
I almost wanted to put it on a plate.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, like you know, how you, what is the word that you unveil the main course on the platter.
The platter with the crush. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's exactly
you
the way
definitely
I thought
go
it.
Back for seconds with that, definitely. Yeah, it's a beautiful cross.
Oh, yeah, no. And yeah. I think, you know what? I think De Guzman playing a little more advanced.
Yeah.
Terry Dunfield attacking midfielder with just, you know, Frings at the back holding things. I think we've got something here. And, you know, if we can... Eckersley, I just think, is not a centre back, but
no.
With Williams and Ken, you know, that should be the players there.
Henry got found out a few times today.
Yeah.
He got found out a few times. And he should have covered one of the goals, and he did that bad challenge that you pointed out during the game. Yeah, he's got a bit of developing to do yet, but obviously you got your man Decoy Williams coming through, so you're ecstatic.
So what about that second half then? Let's segue into that, because this is, we're kind of giving away little bits of it there. That's kind of what it came down to.
I think it was,
and that was the main question. It was, you know, 3-1 at halftime. the hardest lead in sports to maintain a two-goal lead, here is going off about it the whole time, going on about the two-goal lead. It was ridiculous.
And then De Guzman, I think De Guzman got greedy in second half. He started launching it from range, wide as he does, instead of having those delicious crosses and those sexy through balls.
And maybe just a cute pass as well.
Absolutely,
a pass so cute you just want to cuddle it and take it to bed, like a teddy just out in the dryer.
And then just Bruin took it to us. Hard.
And you know what? That's the thing that
in the last 15 minutes, it was just a mad.
Why
struggle.
You know that was sort of one thing leading the game. That of course that's Toronto's Achilles heel, is that you put any balls into the box, throw any crosses, set pieces, corners. For 6 years, it seems like they've never really figured out how to mark on these plays or how to sort of like handle set pieces or corners, anything like that. And here we go again, sort of like, you know, deja vu all over again. Houston climbs back into the game through that matter.
And the first goal, we all saw it too. As soon as the corner was kicked, it was still in the air, and we're like, oh shit.
Yeah, it's like Brad Davis putting in a free kick. You're almost guaranteed it was a corner. You're almost guaranteed that someone's going to find the end of it. And the second one, if I'm remembering this correctly, the second one with they had Morgan and some two defenders on the player who put the cross in, and there was man for man marking in the box.
That was the last goal. The second one was that Brad Davis scooping it into the top corner.
Right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah.
So you give Brad Davis a space and he scores. And the second one, you still had man marking. They had three attackers, three defenders, and Jeremy Hall, you know, he scores a goal. That's great, but I'm not a big fan.
He had a nice back heel at one point.
He did, but I mean, 1v1, he's easy to beat, and on a play like that, he's always just going to be, you know, just going to climb over him.
Inexperience as well, right? And Morgan on one side, Hall on the other. That's a lot of inexperience. Plus Henry, just not a lot there. And Eckersley's been poor all season.
Let's be honest, across the back line, if you count professional games, there's not a lot of experience.
No.
From Hall, I mean, especially in MLS.
Yeah.
I mean, Eckersley has one season on his belt. Morgan has half a season. Henry has half a season at the most. And then you have Hall. Yeah. Who played for Portland and New York, if I'm not mistaken. So, and Dallas. I mean, he's bounced around. So that's something actually to consider when we're looking at the rest of the season coming up.
And the midfield, I mean, it wasn't particularly like, no, it wouldn't be everyone's starting lineup today. I mean, a lot of people would have put Platter or Lamb in there. Looking at the midfield, Dunfield, Julian De Guzman, Avila and Frings, pretty negative on the whole, but they did absolute performance today with De Guzman and Dunfield going forward. I think as a team, Johnson and Kuvermans would be my starting two up front.
Yeah.
So who would your midfield be then, Dan? I'm curious because I wouldn't have necessarily characterized that as negative as a whole.
I've got used to the three up front formation.
Wait, who you missed one of the players there? You mentioned one, but I didn't catch his full name.
Which one?
Terry Dunfield, attacking midfielder.
Oh, yeah, Terry Dunfield, attacking midfielder. I apologise for that. I definitely, after today's game, I would play De Guzman next game. I've disliked him all season, but he really put the work in today, and if he's going to fit into Paul Mariner's system, so be it. I'd definitely put Dunfield in there. But things, but I just feel like you need pace. And there's lacking pace from that midfield, really.
I think I take out Johnson and put in Plata with Kuvermans up top, and then it's the Silva Avila question, right? And you know I love Sulzma, but I don't think at this point he fits. He come in for change of pace, but I'd take out JDG because I think yes, he was very good today, and he put in work, but you know we also thought last year after he scored those two good goals that, oh, finally he'll be worth his salary, and this is a DP we paid for.
We have to touch on that too. We kind of alluded to it earlier. So some of those chances were terrible. Oh, we can't let that go. And it was funny every time he had a go on goal that missed. The net needs to be 50 feet wide and 20 feet high in order for it's this year. It seems like every shot on goal for Toronto and Canada has been completely off the mark.
It's like he's the only one playing with the Jabulani.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's odd. So he had a great first half. But maybe,
that cross was delicious. Did we say that already? How delicious that cross was? It was delicious.
It was very delicious.
So, you know what, here's something to throw, because I have a feeling, you know, we kind of, like, checked Twitter through the game, and, you know, what is our feeling about, you know, 3-1 up, they drop the points, is this a negative result, or is it a positive result, or is it just neither?
I'm ecstatic.
It's a positive result.
It's a great result. Like, whatever, TFC aren't going to do anything in the MLS. The MLS season is over. This is about trying out new personnel, trying out new systems. Paul Mariner's got a great job there. Only things can get better. He's got a really good job there. And, I think it's good. There's a real team effort in there today. Tough tackling all over the park. I think it was a great result. I know the last goal went in, but like normally we'd be all depressed and very glum on this podcast, but we're positive because it was a good result and a good performance.
Now, it doesn't mean there's some things that I think were mismanaged. I think maybe the Frings injury at the end didn't help on the goal because of the mad scrambles. I don't think he was fully fit. I don't know how that will translate if he's going to be hurt for the Saturday, and I think in these conditions, having only two of your three subs come on, and both very, very late, including one in the 90th minute after equalizing goal, you bring on a defender for a striker. I question that a little bit, and then why Spring's still on after he's hurt? Like maybe you take him off, and then
okay.
I know there's not a lot there, but
was it De Guzman was taken off for Reggie Lam as well? That was a very attacking substitution. Was that when it was 3-2 down? I think it was.
And then Kuberman's for Williams. Very interesting substitutions, I gotta say.
Yeah,
but you know, one thing I want to touch on is I can't imagine ever in Fring's career he's had to play in an environment like Houston in the end of June. You know, probably what, 40 with humidity, pushing 40 and having to like go through something like that. I think when you look at these guys who come over from Europe and they're kind of like, oh yeah, you know, playing in MLS, whatever, like it's a complete vacation, and they come here and it's like 8-hour flight. No, probably like a 6-hour flight into the middle of Texas in July. It's completely insane. Yeah. Like, get me out of here. I'd rather go play in Finland.
Absolutely.
Than this.
Yeah. They don't have to play in the summer. They don't see this kind of heat. One thing I would like to touch on is the other, I think, pre-game chatter was about Toledo being a referee and how we've had trouble against him or with him there. He wasn't terrible.
Non-factor. Really, overall, probably non-factor.
The one yellow, which I think was a poor decision.
On Frings?
I think he was solid. He was solid. There's a lot of challenges when we've seen before from CONCACAF referees. It's like they've got a new set of cards for the birthday. They just want to fling him out any opportunity. But like today, there was a few big tackles go in, and he just let the game run.
Yeah. So from an MLS referee standpoint, I think he did quite well.
So let's look ahead. New England on Saturday. I'm feeling a little more positive about that result, to be honest with you. I mean, heading into it, heading into these two games, the three in this short spell, I would have thought New England best case scenario would have been a draw. Now, before we jump ahead of ourselves, I did a little research when last year when we played Houston, got the result. After that result, I think we lost 9 straight games, or we went 9 games without a win. So the question that sort of remains is this just another aberration? Is this just something where it's like, okay, we had one off good performance, the stars aligned, or will we see any kind of consistency, something that's been lacking in this team for the last 2 years?
It's hard to say, right? We were very positive last year after the acquisitions came in. I think Kuberman struggled early this year. He had his injuries. Now he's got 5 goals in 9 matches, and he hasn't started all 9. So, he's definitely doing a lot better. So he didn't score for a while. Nobody has. We scored 3 goals on the road. By far our biggest output of the season. I think there's a lot of positives. My concerns are injuries, right? Like, is anything happened to Kosich? I look a little banged up there.
Frings as well.
And Killen Roberts is not the answer in net, right? He's very, very young. And, you know, like, then we have to have a pool as another pool keeper as a substitute. Like, that could be dangerous and awkward. So I'm hoping everything's fine there. What happens to the three, you know, the three brawlers? Use the term loosely.
The three brawlers. You notice none of them had any, like, bruises or scars on their face. They won. They won that fight, guys.
You should see the other guys.
Well, yeah, you should see the other guys.
A UFC fighter. Just seen him on the post.
Yeah, it's true.
He's Andy. Now, I think TFC league-wise will be consistently inconsistent.
It's a new era now on the Paul Mariner.
It's a new era where he has to try out lots of methods. There's going to be, I mean, he has to make decisions on a couple of designated players at the end of the season, so he's going to be trying out different players, maybe dip into the youngsters a little bit and stuff like that. He's got free reign. He's got a great job there. I envy him. And he's going to be resting players for the Champions League. It's all about the Champions League. Go for another cup run.
You think? Is that where you've got? Because it's the last season in the league, you concentrate on Champions League?
Yes.
Our group is terrible. I don't think we're getting out of that.
It's worth a go.
It's worth a go, obviously.
At the moment,
we have to go to Torreón again, where there'll be another travel advisory. We're not allowed to travel.
Right, TFC are rock bottom in MLS, yeah? As I see it, Champions League in the group, joint top. Hey, they got a chance.
That's some good positivity there.
Yeah, that's good. That's the way we do it here, apparently.
Yeah, you know, I think. But my other concern is, why was the bench so short? I understand there's three players that were unavailable, but surely you're bringing more.
You got to take a couple of backups.
More than the bare minimum.
Yeah, yeah, like, I don't understand, you know, why Emery, you know, Burgos, who else? Like, just so many other players that could have been on part of that trip. Like, what was the rationale? What's going on? As well, like,
Harden.
Ty Harden.
Well, I miss Ty Harden.
He can stay at home. But like, they're obviously
Tyler Henning.
They're saving a little bit of money, aren't they, on the plane fare and stuff like that. And taking
that's
more
what
people,
I think that's what it is.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, I think it's like when you do something like the two row games short, they kind of probably assess the overall cost, who should all come, this and that, and they make the decision based on that. And it's like, keep things lean. Yeah, when you're out on the road too long, right?
Yeah, they use the commercial flights, so they only get two charters a year, right, in the league. So
did you say the three brawlers are back home then now?
Yeah, I think they got sent home. They got sent home. They're here.
I bet they're fighting on King Street right now. That's it. They're going out drinking. I bet Salzman started.
They should be celebrating by now.
That's what Salzman probably started, actually. He's probably a bit grumpy after the Dutch got kicked out of the Euro.
again with the shots at the Dutch.
So we've kind of looked at this game on the weekend. Have we even made a prediction? Do we know, do we have thoughts?
New England.
The New England game, guys.
Assuming there's no major injury to Frings and Kosic.
Now,
I'm going to go 2-0, Toronto.
Wow. Bold.
Wow.
Bold. Because I was just going to remind you, the last home game of last year, which you thought the team would have been up for, New England, I think, was the worst team last year, or the second worst team last year. 2-2 draw was the result, if I recall correctly. And I think they're better this year than they were last year.
That Coquette is back, right?
Yes, Shari Joseph. They also have this French midfielder whose name eludes off the top of my head, who's got 7 goals, who's looking pretty impressive. They got a few bits and pieces there, better than last year.
You know what, I'm saying, I'm going to go for 1-1. I mean, Toronto's defence was pretty shambolic at times, and I don't think I think it'd be a very similar lineup in defence on Saturday as well.
I think it's Mariners' first home game.
Against New England.
His former squad. He's going to get the crowd pumped up. It's a Saturday afternoon. It'll be gorgeous in the beautiful 70 degrees.
5:30 start, not a 4:30 start. Yeah. So if you're going to that game, remember they pushed it back an hour.
And accommodate for the Euro watching.
That's a good idea, that is. Everyone's going to be really, really drunk. There's going to be a good atmosphere there. You're right, the crowd could be behind them. It could be good fun. But I'm still going for 1-1.
I'm feeling optimistic.
Here's the thing is I can't like tonight's I thought it was going to be 2-1 Houston. Until I see, there's no body of evidence to say otherwise that Toronto's going to win on the road or win at home. And if they're going to win at home, it's only going to be against the team that's just as bad, if not worse than them, who's sold off or traded off all their top talent. I would say New England is quite a bit better and has quite a few more dangerous players than Portland. So that's the kind of thing that I'm concerned about in that game. And again, just like we've already lamented a few times, the defending is atrocious. The defending is atrocious. And I don't know how any team wouldn't look in Toronto and just be like, just dump it in the box, throw it in the area, over and over and over, do it for 90 minutes. I don't care where you are in the pitch. Decoy Williams, you gotta be kidding me.
His giant head is gonna get in there.
His giant head.
I didn't realize he's got a big head.
I just assume he's a big lad. He must have a big head.
I'm not particularly big. I've got a really big head.
Yeah, you are a bobblehead.
Yeah, I am.
So to wind it down, to kind of like wrap this up, you know, because we haven't three of us sat together here since the glory of the Champions League and the incredible, I don't know what you call it, downward plummeting that we've experienced since then.
Spiral.
Yeah. You know, after a result like this, whether, you know, a lot of people out there are probably lamenting that we dropped 2 points, but at least we earned a point on the road. And, you know, conventionally across the globe, you know, a 1-1 draw on the road is considered a good result. You know, moving forward, looking forward, if you want to talk about short-term or mid-term, you know, what does Toronto take from this result? Or what do you think Toronto needs to do to kind of build off this?
Yeah. I have a bold prediction to make.
Okay. Another.
At the end of this season, Paul Mariner will be the most successful coach in TFC history.
More successful than?
Chris Cummings.
That is a big prediction. You could be right. You could be right.
I think the squad is there. I think if we can get rid of the Guzman contract somehow, then we could bring in so much depth as well.
Oh, just had a miss on the TV there.
Camilo missed. Wide left. All right, so Dan, any thoughts on the rest of the season and where you think you know, Toronto can at least... maintain the upward trajectory.
Well, it needs to be built from the back. Every single good manager builds their team from the back. I mean, obviously the greatest manager of all time, Roberto Mancini, he built his Manchester City side from the back. The first season he had a lot of critics and stuff like that. He built a great defence. After that he sorted out the attack. That's what Mariner needs to do. He needs to sort out that defence. Maybe that's where the designated player should fall if De Guzman goes. Get a quality centre back in there, then build the attack afterwards.
Yeah, I mean, they've been looking at that Danish center back. He's 32, 6'5".
Per Coldrop.
Fiorentina center back. Udinese before that. Even a little stint at Everton. 33 caps for Denmark. And you saw how great they are. He's not to be trifled with. I don't know if he's a DP, but...
I think he's a fullback. That's the thing. And it's a centre back that's needed.
At 6'5",
from that pedigree,
yeah.
I think we could convert him.
He'd be much better than Ty Harden anyway, let's put it that way.
Yes. Or, you know, that ginger scum.
Words.
I'm sorry, but Eckersley's been terrible this year.
Oh my goodness, where did this come from?
Oh, yeah.
How far are we on here, Raj? The 30-second minute.
It was so much so positive, comes in. Now we go out here, scum.
Ginger scum. Not only an entire race, he goes against...
First of all, Dan knows how much I love gingers. Yeah, I have a soft place in my heart for them. And I actually voted Eckersley second best player for TFC last year.
Okay.
So when we signed him permanently, I thought, this is it. Our right back issue is solved. Like, we don't have to worry about that position anymore.
And then he found out he started his career at Man United.
Well, I knew that already, but I had forgiven him for it. And now he's just been terrible this year. Like, he's had moments of, you know, looking like last year, but... He's not built on it, and he's regressed significantly.
Everyone's been wonderful. Morgan last season, fantastic this season. He's gone missing a lot of the time.
Yeah, but he started well this year. I mean, you liked him a lot. If you look back at the match reports on Red Nation Online, you'll see Eckersley just racks up the 4.5s.
Right? Racks up the 4s and 4.5s. Yeah, that's right.
It's just not solid enough. No. Not from him. Not from
no. You know, and I remember that's true. You know, last year he started off slow, but towards the end of the year, solid sixes.
Absolutely.
So 6.5. He was looking pretty good. So I can't, you know what, I can't argue with that. Overall, I'm kind of still holding out that he'll regain that form.
You would think so. I mean, has become complacent. I mean, we know he's not the sharpest knife in the drawer. talking to people on the team, in the front office, and they're I'm not comfortable saying what they said. You know, no, I'm gonna out them, but. Yeah, I don't know if that plays into it.
Maybe. I don't think we should leave it at that.
Maybe he doesn't understand the formation.
We'll continue that conversation when the microphone is off.
So we're basically saying he's an empty head. But anyway, Ian, what's Mariner's plan then? What's it for you?
Well, Dan, I can't disagree with what you said. He's got, you know, carte blanche. There's no pressure. There's no expectations. Yeah. You just, like, survive through the season and make it happen. And I think, depending on what Mariner envisions, like, I don't know if you know, Anselmi and the ones where I'm just like, look, you're just going to finish off the year and then you're going to get back into your, you know, you're going to sit in the office at the computer and you can play solitaire all day long.
So we'll have an eighth manager.
Or they're going to say, or he's going to say, you know, this is actually a genuine opportunity where I could maybe maintaining this position. If he's going to do that, then we're going to have to see some of these. We're going to have to see some sort of midsummer transfers. I don't know how they're going to happen or where the money or the player or the spots are going to appear from, but that's sort of what it hinges on. And again, like Dan, like you said, starting this team to build from the back, I think there needs to be, obviously, there's going to have to be, without it being overtly, you know, advertised, a period of transition, and it can start now, where it's like, okay, next year we know De Guzman is not going to be on this DP contract. Let's start planning for that now. Yeah. Let's start thinking about this now. You know, if we bring in a guy, you know, someone like the Danish center back that we listed, maybe we can sneak him in on some contract and then say, next year you get the DP status.
Right.
Right? So we'll get you in on a half a year contract, give you whatever money makes you happy, get you some sponsorship crap, and then next year we roll you into a DP status and you make $1 million a year.
Right.
Something here and there. Anyways, but they got to make moves, and they really have to start looking, you know, beyond the short term to the midterm, long term. The stuff we talk about all the time.
And can I just say Boamorte is not the answer?
No,
he's not.
No. There's enough talent on the wing. I know he'd be more of a central midfielder, but no, he's most definitely not the answer.
No.
Centre-back is completely paramount to what TFC needs to do at the moment. I hear there's a lad in his prime actually available on a free transfer at the moment. You might know him, Andy Iroh. I might give poor Mariner a call, see if he fancies him.
I think Nanette Decora is available.
You know what? A left-footed centre back is, I think, what's needed to get this club
is
up.
Is Nanette left-footed?
No, but Andy Iroh. That was the rationale last year for you know, the chain of events that got rid of the league MVP. Was trading away Tony Chani for a left-footed center back that really worked out well for us.
Just had a light bulb moment. Emil Heskey's available. I know he's not a center back. Designated player, Emil Heskey.
There's also talk about Michael Ballack.
We hear that name a lot.
I'd rather not want him.
Really, from this point, it's shocking. We're in year six, and the team still can't talk about center backs. We still can't talk about defending. It's almost never at any point have we had a solid back four for like more than two games in a row. That's simply where it needs to start at this point. You know, we can start from the back and work our way forward. There's an area of transition to work through, obviously, with a few contracts and new players. But let's just start it finally and start to get it right. But on that note, we're hitting that point of the pod where it's time to wrap it up, guys. We know what we're looking at this weekend, JC.
2-0 from at least one goal from our...
Yeah, who's going to score?
Danny Koermans. He's going to win the Golden Boot this year, so he's going to get his goals in now.
He's got to start piling them up.
He scores 15-16 this year.
He's a top goal scorer on 11 at the moment, I think. Or 11 or 12 or
is
something.
Is it Wondolowski? Is that 11?
Yeah,
9 or 11, something like that, yeah.
He could do it, couldn't he?
I think so. He's got 5. He's hitting his stride. I think this is the start of a beautiful campaign.
Dan? You're sticking with the 1-1. Nothing's changed your mind?
I'm sticking with the 1-1. I mean, there's all this optimism talk. No, I'm not having it. I'll just look at the lineup now. I think I'll probably go for Terry Dunfield, attacking midfielder. He got forward quite a few times today. I'm going to go get him to underscore.
He is due. He had some chances. And although the outcome, I don't think, or the means of the outcome, I don't think will be the same, I'm sticking with a 1-1 as well. If you had to peg me on what's going to happen, I'd probably guess an early goal Toronto, late goal New England.
I think if we allow goal, it'll be on a set piece again.
Yeah, for sure. All right, so guys, let's wrap this up. Let's close this down. Starting on the south side. No, the east side. On the east side.
East side, stand up.
Who's this here?
JC Plant, JC underscore Plant on Twitter.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We have the Twitter shout out. We got to do that, eh?
Oh, that's a good idea.
Who's that over here to my right?
I'm Daniel Rouse, Daniel J. Rouse on Twitter.
Yeah.
I've got more followers than JC as well. More interesting.
And to wrap up this delicious podcast, you got Clark underscore RNO on Twitter. And,
he hasn't actually got a name. That's his name. He's Chris and Matt.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's beautiful.
Yeah.
And we'll catch you on the weekend, guys. New England is knocking on wood for at least a point. JC wants 3. All right, absolutely. Catch you next time. Cheers.
He'll understand you, for you are him, and he is.